Welcome to the Hug Nation podcast. Today I talk with Zachary, the nonsense man, a beautiful spirit out of Detroit who I've known for years through the Burning Man community. He hosts the open mics at the center camp stage at Burning Man and it just brings so much wisdom and wit to the world. I hope you enjoy our rambling conversation with a few technical difficulties, but I think it's worth listening to in its entirety. Here's an hour of good vibes and good people with Halcyon and Zachary.
Oh my goodness gracious, this is so exciting!
And I just can't hide it.
You know, just if I lose control, would you like it?
I wouldn't come down with the heavy hammer of judgment.
So I just might.
Okay. Well, you know? A reflex.
Welcome!
Hello!
This is very exciting. I'm Halcyon. I'm here with Zachary. There's this... Well, can you introduce our other guest?
Oh, I am Zachary. I am a nonsense man, and I am Fractal, and I am a distinguished magical turtle. And, well, we are a turtle, and some would say that we are all magical turtles, but I'm a turtle with a turtle on a turtle in a turtle.
So we've got so much to talk about today.
Yeah.
First of all, you may recognize us from such Facebook Lives as "Is this thing on?" and "I think my mic's not working."
Mm-hmm.
But so we have met in person a few times. The first time we connected was you put a video up saying that you had to go to Burning Man and that you would literally do anything to get a ticket.
Yeah, I do recall this. Yeah.
And it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, and I was like, I have to help to get this
ticket. And it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
And I don't, as far as I know, you didn't have to fulfill on one of the things you...
Yeah, wasn't there an offer of some sort of...
some oral favor of some sort. Yes.
No, it didn't come down to that.
Well, congratulations. And I'm so glad that you made it to the Burn, because your gifts have contributed to so many wonderful magical things.
Well, likewise. I mean, ditto. Back at ya.
And so we have kind of continued our paths crossing in at Burning Man. We have continued connecting online. We've started doing some Facebook Lives. And this is our first time, as I'm aware of, the reality sometimes gets blurry for me, but actually sitting down personally, having a live broadcast, having a recorded broadcast, having a dialogue. The pressure's on.
It's our first time having a perpendicular dialogue directed at glowing rectangles
yes.
The first time. Our in-person interactions have all happened within the state of Nevada.
That's right. That's right. We're currently licensed now in Nevada and California.
Yes. Yes. And this is my first time in San Diego.
Well, welcome.
Yes.
It's wonderful to have you. It's a beautiful day here. It's probably similar weather right now in Detroit, right?
I was told that it was snowing just a couple days ago. Don't think it snowed a couple days ago here. So, although I did see a picture of a friend holding their baby outside and saying that the weather is lovely, it's Michigan lovely, as we're here. It's
Michigan lovely.
Is whale's vagina lovely. Which you threw me off with that the other day. I told Halcyon that I was coming to San Diego, and he calls me and is like, "So you're coming to the whale's vagina?" And I did not remember the Anchorman reference.
Well, plus there's so many other events involving mammal vaginas that I invite you to.
True.
That it could have easily been misconstrued for some other place.
Yeah, those functions are they used to be far and few between, but now the dolphin parties and the orca jamborees are really, it's becoming a staple in our society, and I feel like it's really healing for the tribe.
I agree. Well, and once we cross that line of understanding what is aquatic mammal consent, you know, the flipper combination that we've established, once we got that down, for me, my mind was clear, and I can just dive in literally and have a good time.
Well, my policy is that to go beyond reading the signs, I mean, with dolphins in particular, like, they'll approach you, and you just kind of have to be open. And if you're an open channel for dolphin lust, like, you'll know when they're into you. So you don't really have to tell. And I think that's a good policy. If you can integrate that into your human interactions, then I think that that's optimal as well. You know, let's be certain.
Everything I needed to know about consent, I learned from dolphins.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost agree.
Well, speaking of animals that we can learn from, we are blessed to have a magical turtle. The magical turtle.
I would say because we're all magical turtles. And you know, I myself as a human being will identify as a magical turtle, because what I've come to understand that meaning, not to, because there's an esoteric way of explaining this that involves the Mandelbrot fractal set and the fractal kaleidoscopic nature of reality. But to say it in simpler terms, we're all magical turtles because. Well, turtles all the way down. The America has been called Turtle Island. Earth has been called Turtle Island. It has been said that that all of reality exists on the back of a turtle, and it's also this thing of just like it's very endearing. It's very difficult to judge and remain angry with human beings when it's like you know that turtle just tweeted something ridiculous again. You know, it helps me to approach. People, just beings, in a more familial way. We're all just magical turtles.
I love it. I actually, just a month ago, was in Maui and went snorkeling and mm-hmm. had like this 5-minute floating about this far from a magical turtle. And magical is the right word. And I was thinking of you at the time.
I'm learning a lot about them. You want to hear something I just learned? Yes! Magical about turtles? So they have 13 panels on their shell. And something. So that's 13 for the
movies. Each of the colonies of the early United States.
Yeah, and it can also be Jesus and the 12 disciples.
Of course.
But there's 28 of something. Ah, I forgot my fact. So anyway, there's something about 13 and 28 on a turtle shell. Some of you may know. And I just thought that was so epic. And it's every species of turtle has this, and that it lines up exactly with how we, you know. Quantify, do calendar stuff. That's pretty thorough. But they're so powerful. To me, one of the biggest things that stands out is like, this is a thing that we see turtles as cute, and many folks are very endeared by them. And there is a spectrum of different sorts of turtles. There are snapping turtles. There are the Jurassic looking turtles in the Ganges rivers that actually eat human cadavers. And also, a turtle is a creature that is a shield and a castle, a home, and it developed that because it gets sketchy out there, you know. Mm. So after millions of years of a dodgy planet, we now have rendered a shelled, safe turtle that is always home.
I love it. So how long have you been in a relationship, mm-hmm. you guys?
In 2012, at Electric Forest Festival, I remember there was a milestone in. I had awoken in a partially psychedelic state, and went to a rearview mirror of a van that I had at the time that later crashed in a very epic, hilarious tale, which I will not tell now. And I wanted to just, you know, check my face, scrape the dust out of my eyes, and I had just recently committed to being a bald person. In the sense that I was going to shave my head every day, sort of thing. And so I look at myself in the mirror and I see, and I'm making this face, and I go, you look like a turtle. You're a magical turtle. Turtle. And then that developed into later running through the forest screaming, magical turtles. I just really like the way that voice feels to make. And yeah, magical turtles it was, and that just developed into like, whoa, people are really liking this. Whoa, am I able to summon cuteness now? Is that now one of my abilities? And it's since developed into what I would like to be the primary central thing that I offer the world is the magical turtle medicine.
Beautiful, I love it. And we tossed around the word a little bit yesterday, and. I often do the idea of sacred silliness, mm-hmm, and yes. I think that I feel that from you guys.
Yes, yes.
That there is, and I really like, and not to get too meta, but mm-hmm. I think that's acceptable when talking about medicine.
Yes,
right. Is that I initially, when I was getting glimpses of you two, I didn't have an appreciation for how it was quite working. But as I see the dynamic of, and the as a tool of accessing sacredness with silliness, mm-hmm. and disarmingness and cuteness, I think it's a really beautiful tool to help people get to places and help you get to places that are maybe the direct route is a little bit too blunt.
There are some things that to speak about them seriously just can really ruin the vibe, as they say.
Yeah.
I like how Alan Watts puts it. It's like that you're at least maybe not serious, but sincere.
Yes.
And sincerity, I would love sincerity to be in everything that we do and express. And that doesn't mean that, you know, humor is, it can be very sincere. I would say all the best humor is very sincere. There's truths in those jokes, and it's someone being honest. But serious is like, I've really come to understand that adjective as a negative thing to be avoided, because serious means it's gonna be a certain way.
Right.
Like if you can be sincere without being in this place that it automatically denotes stress and anxiety and a tyrannical control over the situation, or at least the desire to be in control. You can be sincere without being controlling, or just, you know, being ready to laugh. It's so great. I made a really excellent friend at Lucidity Festival, where I just came from, and his name is Alexander Niver, Alexander Polinsky, he has this thing, avatarism, which I cannot wait to delve into myself and explain to the world. He says, please learn to laugh as you cry. And I just so resonated with that. And I've done that sometimes in my life, particularly like in tears of joy situations. I've been at the temple at Burning Man several times, and but I felt a little like weird and maybe even like socially ashamed about it before, because, you know, folks want you to be, it's cry time. This is serious. But it's like, I don't know, the meta way that I look at reality and what's going on here, the most sane mode of experience that I get into is one where it is totally safe to laugh at everything, because this is an experience that we're having, and the truth is the physical nature of this nature, of this reality, is impermanent. This will all change form. So what you're having is an experience, and I think we can laugh at our experience.
Absolutely. I think what you said about the seriousness implies a control over it. Like, when I think of things being serious, I feel like there's a right way, and that you can do things wrong. You know, if something, mm-hmm. if you have to, in a church service that's serious, it's like, mm-hmm. you can be sitting the wrong way. You can laugh at the wrong time. There's this rigidness that does not take into account the individual experience that you're having. Who is to say that this experience I'm having right now is not funny? Mm-hmm. That is not joyful. Is not. And I think that when you're mentioning of the Burning Man Temple has been a powerful teacher of me, mm-hmm. of letting go of the way you're supposed to feel about something.
Yes.
And being present, because I've had some of the most incredible experiences of my life, bawling tears there, and having people come up to me feeling like they need to help me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, no! This is the greatest experience that I can imagine. You know, that like to be that this intensity. If you let me have it as intense and not force me to label it as sorrow or sadness or something negative, then I am so rich in my human experience that I will laugh, snot, cry, just like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah. How good it is to have feelings and to be sincerely involved. An example that came to mind of the difference between serious and sincere, of like, you know, almost, I'd say pretty much everybody has something that they're super self-conscious about, and there's neurosis about, like, almost everybody will list something physical about themselves that they're always worried about and trying to. So I can say to the world that like there was a there was definitely a time, and it still flares up, where I'm very neurotic about keeping my head like recently shaved, and I feel attractive to myself when my head is recently shaved and shorn. But once the horseshoe thing starts becoming really, really apparent, then I don't feel so, and I can have really negative ideations about that and feel bad. And if I'm serious about it, it can feel real bad. Mm. If it's just like I'm being honest about this is the thing that I am aware of myself and my own reaction to myself and physical appearance, then it can be a really a funny thing. And I've like developed a thing with hats where there's like it's almost like not ritual so much as when I have a hat on, I'm out in the world, and when I get home and I'm within my home, my turtle shell, and I feel entirely safe with the people that are around me, then I remove my hat, and there's a feeling to having to having the warmth of the hat on that is like that it's becomes my living turtle shell. And And I love that I turn it into this nice magical spell where I remove it at when I become comfortable in front of people.
Ah, cool.
And that came from a thing that I used to be seriously, you know, upset and nervous about, and now it's this playful thing that I joke with, and it's. The thing that I hesitated about for a while and I didn't know where I stood on, if we have to have stances on things, is I know that I'm allowed to laugh at my own pain and you know, tragedies even. And in retrospect, I always end up finding the humor in my rough experiences looking back. But I'm not allowed to externally make fun of other people's unfortunate experiences. But it's so great when we come together and allow each other to view this all playfully. And there was a lot of that at Lucidity. We had this open share circle where we just did like. We started off just sharing art pieces, not just, but poems, songs, and then it became like group therapy, and it got to the point where there was people just really, really gushing from the heart, about their problems, about their past and their traumas, and it was just such a safe container to do that, and everybody was just so supportive of each other, and it was so good to have the turtle around, because you go to these really, really deep, profound places, and everybody, you know, you allow yourself to get emotional, to get intense, like at the temple, and then it's really good to have him as a, not just a palate cleanser, but just a, you know, and this is what we're experiencing. And then to bring it back into the sacred silliness. I've been saying that a lot. There's a song actually from the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack, and the sacred silliness is where I find my heaven.
Really?
I love that.
So one thing that I think that both of us explore is that taking of our personal pain or personal struggles, finding the humor in it, and also sharing things that may be embarrassing or mm-hmm. people traditionally label as, as a shameful or embarrassing thing, and trying to find the humor in it and trying to expose it as a way to kind of, I think, collectively lower the walls that we have.
Yeah, I like the metaphor of low-hanging fruit, of grabbing the branch and lowering it so not just the giraffes can get to it, but the rhinos as well. There's this excellent video of this little girl, I think her name is Tiana, and beep beep, I got it.
We are here with Zachary the Nonsense Man and Fractal the Magical Turtle. And we just got, that was the direct line from the divine, letting us know that it was time to get serious.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I misread that.
It's crunchy.
Trying to get sincere.
It's also 9:31. I had this little girl named Tiana, I believe, and she's on a staircase, and she's talking to her mom, and it seems like they're talking about, like, the parents' recent divorce, and she's like, look, I want everything to be low, okay? We can't have everything high up. It has to be low. So when you talk to my dad, just, you know, below. Everything down here on the floor. And it's just like, whoa, this turtle is speaking wisdom. Because yeah, and that with Burning Man and, as they say, consciousness communities, which I find odd because it's like everybody's conscious just about different things, you know. Anywho, it can get super hierarchical, dominance hierarchy. There can be a dominance hierarchy of who's the wokest, you know, and yeah. who's living the most in line with the highest potential good, who's practicing permaculture, the wokest, and you know, the thought that the general mission is we're trying to get as many turtles to participate in these optimal behaviors that are you know good for the personal experiencer and less detrimental to the planet, you know, and so that has to be inviting. And sometimes I don't think we do this on purpose, but it gets to a point where it's like, wow, that door, there's a really difficult labyrinth for someone new arriving to have to traverse and then climb the stairs and fight the minotaurs that are guarding this door that's supposed to be wide open, like, hey, anybody who wants to and who believes right. and agrees, come on in.
I think that's a really dangerous trend towards, you know, tiers of wokeness and things, because really I think what the objective should be is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And people and it's a practice. You don't, you know, get your brown belt in wokeness and then you get to your black belt in wokeness. You know, you wake up every day and you practice
yeah.
being a person as best you can. And I think that sometimes, like, who's the God on high that says sustainable farming is the answer to all things? I think a lot of people resonate with it being a more in alignment way of living. Beautiful, but you should do it because you feel in alignment with your authentic self, not because somebody told you it's the way to be more woke.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, anytime you are following a external guide, whether it be a sacred book or a guru or something, and you're just doing what they say, you are at risk of going down a really dark path and yeah. potentially being led to all sorts of people who think they're giving you truth have led people down
yeah.
destructive paths. So it's got to be personal.
I think that what I admire in people, or what I would say, because woke has become kind of a joke word,
yeah.
and I like that. I like when things become cliches, because now we have to go deeper for the next thing that is you know, cool and edgy. You know, so there was a time where we're being conscious about spirituality stuff and sacred geometry and whatnot. And I've had DMT and ayahuasca experiences where that was a high tier of wokeness. And now that's becoming pretty standard.
Right.
But like, everybody's done a lot of self work. Everybody's seeing the fractals and stuff. What now? And this is cool that I think that it's become this. I mean, it would be better if things weren't hierarchical at all. But you know, we tend to behave that way. There's, you know, tiers and status is this thing. This is human nature. So I think it's cool that it seems to be the trend now that people want to know, what are you doing in the world? How are you helping? What are your results? And there seems to be a lot of agreement that we need to be fixing up this place, our planet. But it's not so much fixing. It's and not even preserving, maintaining. It's like we need to stop the damaging things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the mathematical scientific truth that there's enough here for everybody. We might be able to double the population if we did things smarter with resources, if we weren't so extractive and more focused on creating closed loops. So that's the permaculture thing, and I think that is great, but there's so many different avenues for the wokeness to make its positive wakes.
Absolutely.
And mine that I want to focus on is on the psychological, emotional, dare I say, spiritual, psycho-spiritual level, by being the most magical turtle that I can be and letting the world see and just showing up and being a magical turtle.
Oh.
We are back. Hopefully you'll find your way back here, or if you got the archive, you'll get yourself back to this. We, you know, the minute we start talking about the depth of wokeness and changing the planet, you know the system has to try to sabotage us.
Yeah, the Illuminati.
They're nipping at our toes.
Yeah.
But we are back. I'm Halcyon with Zachary the Nonsense Man.
And Fractal the Magical Troll.
I saw in chat someone, I keep calling it chat, it's comments, right? Nowadays people don't have chat rooms, they have comments, scrolling comments.
I knew what you meant, and that's what's important.
Okay, good. Someone asked, how did Fractal get his name?
Oh, so there's this thing, the Mandelbrot Fractal Set I'll paraphrase, and also I will admit that I am not well versed or learned about this, but I can say it as if I understand. There was this turtle, Benoit Mandelbro, who stumbled upon this, I guess it's like kind of like an equation, like a code of how digital information seems to manifest, to fractal out. And if you Google search Mandelbrot or just fractal, you'll see this thing, and it kind of, it's like a circle with this little thing. It at the ends of it, it vaguely resembles like a crudely drawn turtle. So it's like if the internet and information is propagating in the shape of a turtle, it's as if it is all turtles. And perhaps you've heard of this thing that it's all one thing, one massive awkward globular dream. If that is so, and it is one thing, then it's kind of shaped like a turtle. So I think that it's kind of logically sound to refer to all of its individual turtles as turtles.
Ah.
So he's Fractal the Magical Troll, and he's my emotional support puppet turtle. We acknowledge that I'm a person with a puppet. This is a visual representation of something that exists inside of me, inside of you, and perhaps inside of all of us. This is something that I did not need to go public with. It became a part of my life. And at some point I noticed that other folks were getting the giggles from it, and there was shared oxytocinal benefit of expressing with the turtle, externalizing the turtle we are inside. So I'm gonna do it, and I'm dedicating my life to it because it seems to really be working.
Fantastic.
Well, so it fractals out.
I love it. That was a good answer. So we, if you're making your way back here, this is part two of our broadcast. We're solving all of the woes of the world, and we're almost done. We almost figured it all out.
Mm-hmm.
One question that we talked about before going on the air was, actually, do you remember it?
Oh, that there's several avenues for the positive wakes of the wokeness to take, and one that is very very popular right now, and I think that this is a good positive thing, is permaculture, creating closed loop systems to discontinue the extractive modalities of how we use the resources of the Turtle Island, our Earth. But there's also the thing that I want to focus on, and I feel like this is totally how I would describe your work, is we're focused on the individual and group, the psychological level, helping people with their emotions and the way that they articulate their emotions, and by being articulate turtles, we help folks feel less alone. And maybe every now and then might even offer a little tidbit of a suggestion of like, hey, this works, this helps, and you know, what is the point of saving the world if we are not saved in it, if we are not healthy in it?
Right.
So beginning with our health.
Well, and I think that also that we have to, on our path of wokeness, on our path of self-healing, it's really dangerous to start to play with the idea of saving the world or healing the world, yeah. because we so quickly get into a ego thought strategy of what that looks like and what that means. And that implies that we know what the world is supposed to be like, or we know how to get everything's fixed. And I think that we can go with our instincts and we can follow, but it's, history has shown that when people get too caught up in their strategies, we get off track. We get out in touch with the heart. And I think that, so if we can instead keep, allow people their own personal paths of wokeness, and maybe it looks like sustainable, you know, harvesting. Maybe it looks like getting water to places that need water. Maybe it looks like, but if we, each of us, can work on our own paths enough and stripping away enough of our shit to figure out what excites us, that I truly believe that if every single one of us, when we go deep enough, we find a way to be of service that is not in a should realm. It is in a, I am joyfully doing this thing.
And then I think we'll do all the healthy things reflexively once we are truly healthy.
Yes.
And that, what you were saying about when we take wokeness seriously, it gets stupid. And that's why it's something that I very much enjoy doing. And I also think that there is great practicality, and I love making fun of what I call the Indebro children. And I, at times, am quite Indebro-y. And I think that it is essential to make fun of wokeness. And I love that it's becoming a joke word, and that to self-proclaim it is embarrassing, you know, to feel like if you're sincerely going around like, I'm so woke, it's like, yeah, okay, well, all right, Buddha Christ, like, you know. And I definitely struggled with a messiah complex in my youth, and nowadays I just rather enjoy it every now and then. I think that everybody, as soon as you begin to realize your own potential to have impact in this world, then that becomes a factor, because we got all these stories, you know, and heroes' stories. The hero's journey is such an inspiring model, a map, an allegory to help theatricize your own real life story of what you're doing and how you're helping. And it is so important and so built into reality to be humbled. Like, if I ever get a week straight where I'm feeling super duper important, I am the chosen one, I am the turtle that lived, I am the Jedi who will bring balance to the tortoise, it's only a matter of time before something smacks me right down to, like, you're a ridiculous little thumb monkey, and you're doing what you can, and by all means keep trying, but you're silly, you know. And that doesn't mean that you can't be super duper effective and profound, but I see the most effective and realized expressions and thoughts, and I don't get to see inside of people's experience, but I feel like the most genuine experience that leads to the most sincere, authentic, and genuine externalizations, as I call them,
external,
come from being humbled. So I'm very, very glad that that's kind of woven into the fabric of the human experience, to be constantly humbled. It's an ever apparent truth that we're silly. We're also awesome, also powerful. It could also be said that we are gods of our own experience, of our own reality, and we're also silly little conscious thumb monkeys that have no idea what we are, what this is, where we came from, or exactly what we should do about it. But it's cool that we're starting to agree that we should that we are wanting to optimize the things that we have decided are the good stuff of reality, like joy and love and meaningful pursuits, and all of those things become easier with health, and that is the health of the planet, and that is all these things. So my most important metric, if I'm going to be assessing turtles and myself, is like, are you showing up sincerely and honestly because if you're doing that, that's what I see as trying to help. You know, you maybe you haven't identified your specific mission or arena of this story that you are going to focus your energy on. But if you're showing up, really looking around and feeling your feelings and being sincere, you're helping. You're part of this.
Amen. And I would argue that if you are acting, even seeking your truth and acting authentically, that you are part of the healing. And you may not have a concept, or you may not be able to see the effects of the ripples of your actions, but if you walk through the world in integrity, you affect people. You affect things. I mean, people say, well, I just want to make a difference. Brother, sister, let me tell you, you are already making a difference. No matter what, you impact people. Now, do you want to make it impact in alignment with, you know, healing? Then be yourself.
Yeah.
And you have no choice.
Yeah. I'm so glad to recently I have made great strides. It's not, and sometimes we want to rush to say, like, I'm over that now. But it's like everything is a lifelong battle, and the book doesn't close until, I don't know, but I used to get the wind taken out of my sails by the numbers. It's like, there's only 12 people at my show tonight, or, you know, thankfully I don't have my glasses, so I can't see how the number there, but, like, you know, I could look over there and be like, oh, there's only 2 people paying attention to us right now, so maybe it doesn't matter, and maybe it's you know, I shouldn't try as hard. And it's like, I'm over that now, because one person, and not even necessarily one other person, I'm listening. Mm-hmm. you're here, where I'm experiencing, my experience matters. One turtle, and it's only ever one turtle. So
right.
to be over that, and now I see that just making me so much more able to show up and be helpful, because, you know, maybe I just help heal my family. Maybe my mother and sister and father and a few of my close friends are able to benefit and just have optimal experiences from my efforts to be sincere and to just you know, we use this word better or fix, but like, I'm just trying, you know, actually trying. And they want to say do or do not, there is no try. But I love the humblingness of try. I'm trying. I'm attempting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what success would be, but I am putting in an effort. And, you know, you don't want to be straining effort. It does definitely seem like we're more effective when we're flowing, as they say. And maintaining flow state is not about, I'm gonna get into flow state. All right, and now I'm, you know, doing it. You really do just be. But there is, I experience myself as trying sometimes, and I'm glad. And it's humbling. You know, there's folks that could benefit from being humbled, and there's folks that could benefit from being empowered. I had this song, God Fractal, that says, you are a magical trial, or God. And I felt weird about that song after a while, because I was like, you know, there's probably sociopaths who are hearing this, or just like, you know, like, this is somebody who's more on the pompous end of that spectrum of, like, you know, humble the mighty, embolden the meek, sort of thing. And there's some people who are hearing this and like, yeah, I'm God, I'm in control, I get to do it. And it's like, you know, I felt weird about it for a bit there. But now I just, you just show up and try to help. And I'm glad that I sincerely think intellectually and feel viscerally, emotionally, that I've heard it said, you're not even just nothing. You're gum on the bottom of nothing's shoe. Somebody said that about what they experienced from an ayahuasca ceremony, of just like, just your smallness in the grand totality. Mm-hmm. But it's very, very interesting that there is a living paradox that whilst I know that from a certain level of analysis, I am gum on the bottom of nothing's shoe, but also I am, and you are, the main character of this eternal story. I mean, you are so, so important. You are central as well as bloop.
Right.
So one of the things that my spiritual technology that I like to use, but I don't like having my nose touched by strangers, so I don't do it all the time, is the boop. The boop on the nose. Like, so, and sometimes when I'm in the mirror and I'm all serious and I'm sad or upset with myself, I just boop. Just like, remember you're ridiculous.
And when I was like in college, I had a very angsty, what's the point of anything kind of years, and had this like aha moment when I you go deep enough into nothing matters, then you're like, wait, if I am the gum, if I am the bottom of the shoe, if nothing is has any that I do has any sort of significance, if nothing matters, then the fact that I exist at all is a miracle beyond comprehension. The fact that it just suddenly went through the hole, and then it was then the magnitude of everything was insane.
Yeah,
I wanted to go back to one thing you said about being not over, but good, working, being better at numbers and being and scale of things and measuring
the
that.
Regard for it.
Yeah, because I think that's something that I at times. I'm totally at peace with things, but I get triggered, and suddenly I see something, somebody popular that I, you know, used to tutor, you know, or so, you know, and I'm like, oh, what? Well, how come no one's listening to me? Or how come, what? There's only 15 people. What? And so I go back and forth, and I keep having to remind myself that's the old ego story of success as bigger, more greater, grander. And I was thinking about, you know, the video you put up of Fractal singing to the little boy. I think
it was said girl. And oh. I love that that's such a common occurrence now where it's just, we're just like, oh, you know, whatever. Does it really matter? But yeah, no.
Little child.
Gender unconfirmed.
Unconfirmed.
Cadence was the name.
Beautiful little turtle. And that gathering and the people there, say there was 20 people, 30 people?
Yeah, is it 20, 30, yeah, somewhere around there.
And then, you know, earlier in the night, there was probably a stage where someone performing with
thousands
of people.
Yeah.
And was one of those gatherings a more significant healing experience for the world?
By my value system, ours was so much, it's not on a spectrum hierarchy, but so much more potent when there's that silence and that be able to regard everyone and the eye contact, and that doesn't happen from the big stages. I used to crave the big stage so hard, but I realize now the most profound things that I can do, particularly with like poetry, rapping, word spells, I get to sit in lotus position with my knees touching someone's, staring right into their eyes and cast a spell to them, for them. And it's so powerful for me too to do that, because man, these eyeballs and the ridiculous truth of what we are, the powerful and ridiculous truth of what we are, is I get to watch this show, and that is what changed the game for me. With magical turtle therapy, magical turtle medicine, with that effort, it's like, what am I really trying to do? I'm trying to help myself. One could say heal myself, but sometimes I don't like to say that, because it's like, what are we healing from? We can call these things wounds, or we can call them part of the dance of our lives. I mean, everything that happens is part of it. So to say that we're healing, it's like, okay, then the wound closes, and now you have the memory. And I actually really appreciate some of my inoptimal experiences, unfortunate feeling at the time, that now are the reason why I relate with people. So. Now that I observe myself as having an emotional support turtle, and I'm just deciding to publicly be my own therapist, and obviously others come into that, and so having this group therapy that really it's that thin line between selfishness and altruism of like. If I'm focused on myself and my own one could say healing, or really, if I'm focused on my own experience, that's going to be the most altruistic life that I can live, actually, because I also love, I love turtles, I love people, right. And I love this group cohesion that we're starting to master, myself and Michael Numinous, who is a tremendous poet. I can't wait to show you his power over the language, his ability to articulate what we have been deeply feeling for eons. This guy is chain lightning woke. Anywho, me and him were charged with the task of facilitating this open share circle. And he is so sincere and so profound, and also capable of silliness and humor, we just have such a dynamic, and we got to experience a level of group cohesion that I've never seen before, and we're taking notes of what seemed to help it, and the things that we could do better in the future, and I just know that we have found a technique that is crazy powerful medicine for the turtles. With this, we don't know what to call it yet, but it is not just an open mic. One, there's not a microphone. There doesn't have to be. It's this open share circle. It's this open heart mic, and it was a level of cooperation and group therapy like I've never seen, and I cannot wait to bring it to the next festival, to the next park. I think that having this regular opportunity for folks to get together and express is going to be so healing and magical. It, you know, don't you feel like you're being able to express on a regular? It's so therapeutic.
Absolutely.
It's for me. It's for me, yeah. And others can benefit.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's that there's that that having a supportive circle, having a supportive community, having a supportive family, whatever it is, like, that humans need a safe container to get to that place of authenticity, that then they can become the person they're supposed to be, so they can be in alignment, so they can feel the joy of being in their purpose. And I think that you know, I think about it a lot oftentimes of communities, but I think that the what you're experimenting with of this, like, in the now, you know, maybe strangers in a moment container of safety, of support, is a extremely powerful healing tool. If people, especially when there's people role modeling it, mm-hmm. which I mean, I wasn't there. I was hearing you talk about it, but, like, you know, when you have people that, when people expose some vulnerability, you know, and then they and the vibe there is love, mm-hmm. you know, and that just creates a place where people can get to a place that often people have never felt before.
Yeah, I got to see several magical turtles speak in a public capacity for the first times in their life, and there was I couldn't tell. And for some announce it, they say, I've never spoken on a stage or, you know, in front of this many people before, and it's just, you can tell that something breaks in that moment. There's folks who use the map, the model of chakras, and that's the one that I've, like, had a visceral experience with. But, you know, I don't have to call it a chakra, but I feel this thing in my throat, like this I don't know, this not necessarily a sphere, but like this energetic concentration of the stuff that makes expression happen or that makes it possible. And I've felt this, like, you know, like what experienced as like a blockage. And when you get the thing happening where it's like my heart is directly linked to my throat and my brain is there helping formulate the language part of that, and it just goo, and there's times where I'm listening, I'm speaking, and I'm hearing myself articulate my / the thoughts and mm-hmm. feelings. And when I see someone else doing that who hasn't experienced it before, just to see them, like folks will tell me that, like, I need to go process. Like, I host that the open mic at Burning Man at Center Camp, the spoken word, and the last 2 years, it's just been super duper free. Anybody can just walk up and share, and have so many people who speak publicly for the first time. And several folks have expressed to me afterwards that it's like, that was so good, I'm so glad that happened, but I'm feeling like Dixon's Violin, a very dear friend of mine, an awesome musician, magical musician, he coined the phrase vulnerability hangover. I'm not sure if he coined it, but he definitely gave it to me. And yeah, they'll say like, I'm just feeling really vulnerable, and I think it feels like I'm like a tooth with no enamel, and I need to go somewhere and process this. Like, thank you for helping me to make, you know, welcoming me to have that experience, and I need to go like process what just happened, because I don't do that. It's like, well, you just did.
right.
And I see people just feeling, receiving these benefits from this. It's like an exhaust, you know. There's something in us, and expression is how we get it out. And it doesn't matter the numbers, but you need someone to be sincerely listening to you, hearing you, mm-hmm. and understanding you. So it's not just like vomiting, where it's like, you know, that could, you could do that onto a patch of lilies, or into the ocean, or into a bucket, or onto the carpet, and it doesn't matter for the benefits is that it gets it's stuff getting out of you. But with this expression thing, with this communication, with the you know, sometimes it is like a purge, but other times it's this sharing and this connective thread that you extend from your mind, heart, spirit, whatever, to another. You need to be heard, understood. And you don't get to decide when you'll be understood. You have to try to be translatable, to be understandable. And I'm so grateful to have accidentally developed this as a skill now, and now lucidly am really trying to be the best, most expressive turtle that I can be.
But I also like that you speak to, and I've mentioned a number of times, that the importance of the listener, you know, and sometimes that's, I think, when people are figuring out what their gifts are to share with the world, it's easy to forget that being a listener, being a receiver, being a participant in someone else's expression is a critical part of the blossoming of any mm-hmm. turtle is. So I was just at an event where someone was saying, it's not art unless someone experiences it.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, wow, let me chew on that, because I'm not sure if I agree with that yet.
Hmm. Maybe that's the definition of art, because because the way I read that is, you know, I go out into the woods and I don't record myself speaking, and I'm not thinking about others, and then I'm just having experiences. And sometimes maybe I'll practice some lyrics that I wrote, or I'll get into, I'll play something on the harmonica, and in that moment I'm having an experience. I'm not necessarily doing art. Mm. If there's one person there, then it's a performance.
Right.
And the difference between practice and performance is also really interesting, because I'm always practicing. I'm sure of that, but am I always performing? If I'm paying attention, then I'm performing, you know, because I have my one turtle audience.
Right, right. So, how are you doing fatigue wise? More got a little bit more in you?
Yeah, I
okay.
I
so go. So you sent me the topic about being consistent and sticking with an identity in a changing world.
Yeah.
And
how do we commit to an identity when the world is always changing, the circumstances always changing, and I don't know about you, but I'm always changing. I'm always, and sometimes to a degree where it's like I don't agree with myself 2 days ago. What was he saying? And I'll be embarrassed by my old expression. So yeah, so I'll ask it to you. How do you commit to an identity when it's always changing?
Oh, first I don't feel. Let me chew on talk it through a little bit, because I was gonna say, I don't feel like I have to commit to an identity. In fact, like I was very influenced by David Bowie, you know, someone mm-hmm. who as part of his art continually invented a new identity and
yeah.
said, this doesn't serve me anymore. This is no longer challenging me artistically or whatever. I'm gonna be a new look, a new sound, a new. And so I like looking back at some of my, you know, pictures and being like, wow, I was a totally different person then. At the same time, as I'm saying that out loud, I'm like, I struggle now as I'm at a, you know, older, more established time in my life. I do feel like I have a little bit of this like inertia and momentum in an identity, and it is harder to stray from it.
Do you feel like you are open to something essential changing is the thing?
Mm.
Something definitive, you know? I recently had an intellectual renaissance where after the election of one Voldemort,
I don't remember that happening, but keep going.
I concluded that it is an unacceptable hypothesis for me going forward, because I want to reach people, and I want to reach all the children. I don't care if your parents are conservative. I don't care if your parents have a big rainbow swastika tattooed on their forehead. Like, your child is an innocent. Your child is deserving, you know, and I'm not going to let somebody, I don't want that to get in the way. And I don't, so I want to rid myself of the visceral judgment that I feel about certain people. And that's just me. I'm not weighing in on punch a Nazi debate at all. I'm just saying that the most important thing to me is communicating to children ages 0 through 136. So it was an unacceptable hypothesis that half of the country that I live in are jerks. There had to be some rationale. So I started listening to conservative voices and really listening for the intellectual value of what I always viewed as the other side. I'll spare you my conclusions, but people have a different rationale for how to show up in the world in a way that is fair, and I healed my division of the left versus right thing. There are super duper jerky behaviors on both sides, and in the extremities of either one, when you commit to an ideological identity, it gets stupid. This I am sure of. So I have rid myself of the tribalism that I did definitely feel and intellectually think throughout a lot of my life, and I'm so glad that now I am not thinking like, is it going to be a bunch of conservatives at this event? Like, I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking there's going to be some people, and I'll be able to read an audience and see what sort of words might land better. I'm glad that happened. So that was a transformation for me in identity, whereas before I would have said that I was more down with this ism than that ism.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just really focused on us-ism, and there's nothing that I deny myself the right to call anything that is on this sphere or in space, you know, not part of me. It's all my business. It's all my responsibility. So there's behaviors and ideologies that I repudiate. Obviously, they suck. But I'm not here to vanquish evil. I'm here to inflate the star balloon bubble of love and optimism and humor and joy and magical turtle awesomeness. And conveniently, that battles evil.
So. Well, I think that what I have come to the painful realization is that fighting evil, or what you perceive to be evil, is not productive.
Mm. It's focusing on it.
Evil never says, oh, a fight? Well, then I'm going to lay down my arms.
Yeah.
Evil says, a fight? Sweet!
That's what I do.
That's what I do, exactly. And let's, like, this is, you know, I've been, and so the only way that, if you think that there's opinions out there that I don't agree with, not only is it, if I go to war with it, one, I'm pushing myself farther away from that side, so I understand it less, and two, I'm just creating the division that's stronger, I think what I learned over the year post Voldemort, election was that the more I tried to fight the battle for my beliefs, the worse things got within myself and within the people that I was in contact with.
Exactly.
And so the only thing that I have seen to work in any way is respect and love, mm-hmm. and listening and legitimately letting go of an agenda of changing anything.
Yeah.
And I there's been something going on, there was just this last week, when Tony Robbins kind of mansplained the Me Too movement to the woman who spoke up. Do you see any of those clips? She was like, I don't think you understand the Me Too movement. And he said, it's victim mentality. And she's like, I don't think you understand it, And he kind of got the crowd against her. And the clip went viral saying, like, Tony, you gotta say sorry. And he eventually said, I'm sorry. But the woman at the I think it's Nanine McCool, that's her name, it's a really, I think, a beautiful model of progress in dialogue.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't she's not angry at Tony. Uh-huh. She listens to I understand you, I see that you see it this way. Yeah. That's totally valid. Let me try to explain it in this way, and kind of gives the space between the two. Mm-hmm. For him to keep his dignity, I don't say him, but anytime you're having these dialogues, him to keep his dignity, keep his respect, and empower him to make a choice to come towards you if he wants. Yeah. And if you can't do it as a strategy to like trick someone, but if you legitimately let someone have their opinion, it gives them room to hear your opinion, and I think you can have a respect in that place that people can come. And I've done it myself where I've had a friend where I'm like, okay, I'm going to truly listen, truly listen, truly listen, truly listen. And by the end of it, I'm like, okay. Like, I don't agree with you, but we're closer.
That's the technique. That's the idea behind my podcast media thing. I want to eventually turn this into an open source thing, but it's Welcome to the Nonsensus. And what the Nonsensus is I'm neither of these two turtles, or if we do a street interview or whatever, or if it's me just talking, I'm not informing you of the truth, but what you are seeing and what is factual is like, whoa, someone thinks that enough to say it. So I've learned that someone thinks that way. I was really, a great linguistic technology that really changed the way I do interpersonal communication is it's a dialectic. We want a dialectic, not a debate. I don't want to have a word fight with any of you.
Totally.
You know, there's like Ben Shapiro, for example, is such a linguistic athlete. I don't think that you don't really beat someone like that in a debate, because they're using words as ammunition in this game, and he's just tremendously skilled at it. I disagree with that turtle profoundly on so many things, but he articulates the importance of freedom of speech and actually exemplifies it in a way that I think is like ideal. I can almost not name others who put it, who display that in a way that I'm so aligned with. So I disagree with him so hard, but he needs to be able to speak. I would defend his right to say these things that I think are tremendously at times mean, but I don't want to debate with that intellectual element. I do want to have a dialectic, because we need to find some teamwork here.
Well, it's funny you say teamwork and team and debate, because the debate is, as you say, a game. It's a fight. It's a war. It's a trying to win
for you.
And and that's the challenge. So much in so much of our country is the. A fight is really compelling. People like to watch sports because you want to hate the other team and love yours. And when we have sport mentality that comes into religion, it comes into our politics, and so people, the media gets that, and so there's nothing that is better at getting us engaged than saying your team's awesome, their team sucks.
Yeah.
And that's and debate and the kind of dialogues that we have, we don't have dialogues. We have debates and the kind of turning up the heat on the disagreement,
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of like the train wreck kind of base tribal instincts in us, and debate just makes it worse. Would you say dialectic or
dialectic? I believe the definition is a dialogue that is aimed at we're finding truth from playing intellectual ping pong with each other. You know, you think and will say things that I don't think and don't say. That's what I really, really love about the dualism of feminine masculine. And sometimes it happens in a way where I am a man and you are a woman. And holy shit, you just said something that that would have never occurred to me. But now it's in me. And here's my response. And I've had conversations with you know, it's interesting, whatever the words we use, but I've had conversations with someone who is very different from me, and it's been so much better than an echo chamber game of ping pong where we're just bouncing it back and forth and being like, oh, this is great, have it back.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great, have it back. Instead of this, huh, this could be, you know, that's kind of stupid. And, you know, right there, that's just entirely your narcissism. There. And it's like, thank you. You made my this better.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do that. I wanted to say something about me too, because I think that's the perfect that's my perfect analogy, and it was or the lesson that was taught to me of I feel like I have a better understanding of what to do before I express on an issue that the group, that the collective is hyper focused on, with good reason, like Me Too and consent, is that I thought for a long time, like, oh, I'm getting pretty like mature and thoughtful and well intentioned, like I should speak about this. And the more I wait, the more my the things that I'm saying are focused more on like what would be helpful and what is timeless, you know. So what I would say about that is, or what I want to say about that is, I have material with the turtle that to value mutual enthusiasm. So the word consent just means you let it happen. You said okay. You gave permission. And I've come to a place from a long journey now where like I require to be certain of mutual enthusiasm before affection is desired. And whatever ways we can help each other get to that place, like that's ultimately what would be best from this. So I could come out and say like things like, you know, of course there was, of course it was going to be taken in all directions, and there was going to be some false accusations or some weird ones like Aziz Ansari and the debate about is there a spectrum of the intensity of sexual error and misbehavior and then assault and criminal offenses, you know, like those are all important conversations, but my energy would be best in like, okay, what is the central most good summarizing sentence of this whole lesson? And that is, don't attempt anything mutual in this world without mutual enthusiasm. And I like to use the acronym ME. So don't attempt anything mutual without me. And that's a don't rule, so that's a negative. But to put it in a positive way, like, it's so good to not just regard, but to fully celebrate that I am a free will sovereign being, and I get to make my goddamn choices, and you are so that as well, all of you are, and let's figure out what we are mutually enthusiastic to co-experience together, and do the F out of that, and yeah. So with the identity thing, I am starting to formulate an identity of I want it to outwardly be known that I'm trying to help. I want that to be part of my, at least the like public identity, that it's like, before I speak publicly, I'm going to think about it and I'm going to think, how does this help? Because although I definitely have an ego and definitely regard myself quite a bit, I would like to get better. I would like to practice and improve in regarding the public square, the marketplace of ideas, as the place where I show up when I'm certain that I can help to advance the dialectic.
Amen. And I think part of being able to advance the dialectic is to role model a quality of a maybe not total certainty. I've been, especially lately, I've been very careful when I talk about, like, sometimes I feel like I should say something about current events with Me Too stuff, but I try to be as clear as possible in expressing my limitations and my ignorance in certain areas, and you know, and I am absolutely not committed to the stance that I'm taking right now. I'm trying to express the conclusion from all the input I'm getting right now, and I've gotten a lot of new input in the last couple of months. Yeah. And so, like, the things that I thought about the world a year ago are a little different now. So I guess in terms of like the consistency, like when people criticize a politician for being a flip flopper, I'm like, wait, are you saying that somebody who changed their opinion because new information came to light is a bad thing?
Yeah.
Like, what? I want people to be like, yeah, I guess maybe I'm not for guns anymore, or you know, like,
yeah.
If not to weigh in on that, but you know, like,
yeah,
and so
come to,
and I think that the exciting thing for my path lately in terms of in my awareness of dolphins,
ooh,
turtle, there's dolphins,
ooh.
Is the that. I'm, halfway through this life and am being totally just cracked open of, like, it's not the way you thought it was. Like, there's huge, huge messes. I mean, half the population is having an experience of reality that is not what I thought it was.
Oh, sure.
And so it's like, oh, okay, well then now I have to, when I say things from a place of absolute, I have to go, oh, no, this is not absolute.
Yeah.
I'm putting the pieces together, and I'm learning every day.
Yeah.
And thank you for everyone who's teaching me. But even that being said, I think this is the way to be kind right now.
Yeah, I'm so sure that I'm not sure about some things. Like, there's some and I'm no longer afraid or ashamed or worried about seeming not smart. I don't know what smart is. You know, I did like by my value system, you're smart if you're the competency to produce real world results that can't be debated, because there's a lot of people who can say who can articulate things really really well, and that is important for sure. But if you feel you have a stance and a mission here, like, how do you bring that into where you're making some progress? You move the line a couple inches today. That's what I would say. That's the kind of smart that I want to be. I'll say that.
Right.
Because there was a long time where it was just, I had so many opinions and I could always come up with an opinion of things. And now, there's some things that are super duper important that I don't, sorry if I look dumb, or if some people will have accused me of being like, less passionate or even apathetic, for this, but I don't have a personal stance on guns and gun control, because it's just so complicated and there's so many levels of analysis. What I know, though, let's make things safer. Let's actually augment policy in a way that produces results. Do I have the answer to that? Absolutely not. What I know that we need right now, and that's what I want to help, is like, we're not having adult conversations because we're divided in this by these intellectual ideologies. If we could help fix that a little bit, then we'd actually be having the conversation of how do we help this, and we'd be trying things, and we'd be implementing things, and we'd be doing things that would actually, we'd be able to look at statistical results and see if it's helping. So I know I want things to be better, safer, I know that, but do I have my opinion or my suggestion to put forth? No. I like to listen to the intellectual heavy hitters of our age, and there's a few big issues that I'm not ready to speak on. One that I would say, I try to find a thing that's certain and timeless, and that can be my opinion. There's folks who are discussing the discernment between world religions, and there is quite a bit of talk about Islam. And so Sam Harris, you know, is like out there making the argument that we should make this discernment. And all my opinion has right now that I'm certain of is I love and wholeheartedly support one Malala Yousafzai who identifies as a Muslim. So to say that or people who identify as those are problematic or wrong, incorrect, because that turtle is a hero, a living, it's just so inspiring to me. I have been lifted out of depressions and fits of self-doubt because, oh my God, Malala exists and she's really doing it. So maybe that's not as fleshed out as an opinion as some people want you to have, mm-hmm. but it's like, okay, there's my stance. I love you all, and let's figure this out.
Yeah. Oh, I want that T-shirt.
I love you all. Let's figure this out.
How can people find more of you, more Turtle? Where's some things coming up for you?
Right now, I would say YouTube. YouTube.com/ZAK and What Army, Zach and What Army. Or just search the Nonsense Man. There's not so much Magical Turtle content yet because I was working on it, but I'm trying to make an album, and there will be our first music video is going to be coming this year, and many more to come. I have a Patreon, and that is my central online thing of importance, and I want to put a lot more effort into being interactive with that. I pray for the fall of Facebook. We're using it right now, but I love social networking. I love this, but I just that shade of blue. I'm overseeing
over
that shade of blue.
Yeah.
Instagram is I am a nonsense man. Search nonsense man. Somehow I'm the only one calling themselves the nonsense man.
Well, search for the nonsense man. It's Patreon/nonsenseman. So that's
yes,
/nonsenseman.
I'll put it all in the thing. Can I say one last thing? Is
absolutely.
I just want to say, I know I could be the magicalest turtle the world has seen, and I know it's only a matter of externally being me, and my turtle shell is my cozy home whenever I want to hide. But the world needs us to externalize the turtles we are inside. You are a magical turtle. Yo.
What a treat. Thank you for being here. I love you.
I love you as well. Let's figure this out.
Let's figure this out.
Please subscribe to the Hug Nation YouTube channel. Follow me on Facebook. Check out Halcyon Pink on Instagram, or just listen to the wind, and I'll be there. I love you. If you enjoy this, share it with a friend, an open-hearted person who might be part of our wonderful collective Hug Nation family.